I take refuge in the Buddha. I take refuge in the fact that a being can become enlightened. That is, a being can get free of any particular state of consciousness, attachment to me. Second, the Dharma, I take refuge in the law, in the organization of the universe, the laws of the universe. You could also call it karma. And the third thing is, I take refuge in the Sangha, in the community of other people, of monks on the path, the way it's said. Community of other people that are seeking. So that when you define yourself as a seeker after sensual gratification, then you surround yourself with other people who are seekers after sensual gratification. When you define yourself as an intellect, you often surround yourselves with intellectuals. When you define yourself as a seeker after consciousness, you start to surround yourself with other seekers after consciousness. Because in that phase, being around such people really gives you a kind of environmental support. It's like you take the matter of consecrating life actions, meaning what I mean by the word consecration is bringing into consciousness its the nature of the act in a cosmic plan. Right? For example, when I bless food, right? Now in the old days, there used to be people who would say grace. Grace was the thing you waited for before you ate the turkey. You know, the Norman Rockwell characterizes the kid reaching, waiting while everybody's head's bowed. It's that time that, let's say grace. Statement I say when I say grace is an old Sanskrit one that says, Brahmarpanam, Brahmahavir, Brahmagni, Brahmanahota, Brahmaitan Gantabhyam, Brahma, Karma, Samadhina. Which means, this offering of this thing, this little ritual I'm performing, this is part of all. Right? It's part of Brahma. It's part of that which is eternally all. He who's making the offering, meaning this, is part of it all. That which is being offered is part of it all. The hunger to which you are feeding, which you are feeding, the Agni, the fire which you are feeding, that's part of it all. Whoever you're offering it to is part of it all, too. He who realizes that all of it is interrelated, all of it is one, becomes one with it all. That's what that says. There's a very lovely short story by J.D. Salinger called Teddy. Which Teddy is a very, he's like an old lama who's taken a reincarnation in a kind of a middle-class Western family by some quirk of cosmic design. And he's about 10 years old, and he's on a ship with his sister and his mother and father. And he's out on deck, and he's meeting this man has begun to see that this little boy isn't quite like a little boy. And he says to him, when did you first realize that you, how it was? And Teddy says, well, when I was 6 years old, he said, I was in the kitchen, I was watching my little sister in her high chair drink milk. And he said, I suddenly saw, he said, that it was sort of like God pouring God into God, if you know what I mean. If you know what I mean. Well, that's exactly the same thing as that Sanskrit mantra. You're pouring energy into energy for a matter of energy in honoring energy, you know. So big deal. So nothing's happened. Certainly knocks a hole in orality, to start to see the universe that way. What are we doing? Nothing. How could you ever do anything? It's all here. We all here, sure. So learning how to consecrate and so on it's helpful to have people around, because when I consecrate the food now, it's part of my karma to be visiting my father, who is a 73-year-old, 4-year-old Republican from Boston, a conservative man. And um, very successful man in the society. And when we sit down at the table, he starts to eat. And then he looks over and he sees that I'm doing this thing, which I do quietly. I'm not coming on about it. I'm just sort of sitting quietly, remembering that it's all absurd. He'll hold his spoon in midair, so you know, he'll go, just that little, it's almost an involuntary thing that comes out every night. It's that, you know, like, okay, I'll wait for the kid. I mean, whatever, it's just, you know, it's his Meshuggah thing. It's all right, whatever, you know. Now, that's not called satsang or sangha. That is, that's not the community of monks on the path. See? And that, whether that helps me or not, see, is a function of where I'm at, really. In other words, if I am into what I'm doing strongly enough, all that does is arouse a feeling of poignancy about our predicament. But it doesn't in any way deter from the amount of the living, vibrant quality I can invest in the thing I'm doing. Because you can say, Brahmapana, I go to church now and then around the United States, and we sing these hymns that are mind-blowers. I mean, they are all hymns that get you high. They were written by people in ecstatic states, and you read them, you go out, and everybody's reading them like they're reading a shopping list. You know, it's like, because there's no spirit. The thing isn't invested in any way. And yet whoever wrote it invested it, and we say, well, they were naive. See? But what we mean is that we're turned off. Because when Christ says, look, I am making all things new, it's when you're really living here and now, every moment is all fresh, and that hymn is the first time you ever heard it, and you really go out on it. Otherwise, what'd you go to church for? The third part of the ashram cycle is where a member of the community goes into the city and pursues what Buddha calls right livelihood. That is, he raises the bread for the commune. I once was with a group of ex-convicts who had started a commune up in the mountains outside of Los Angeles. They would go out, about 100 of them, and they would break into groups of eight and lie out in the woods with their heads touching and all take LSD. With their wives and children. And they had quite a powerful community, and they were wondering what to do to broaden their... Because after a certain point of working inside, you begin to feel the pull of service. The pull of sharing or serving. It's like a karmic predicament you're in, that you can only collect so much before you got to hand it over, spread it out, and then you can go back inside. And so they asked me what to do, and I said, why don't they open a shop in Laguna Beach? Which they did, which is now a fantastically successful shop where they make the crafts up in the hills and ship them in. And that whole process is one of building these different parts of ourselves, and people rotate through these various scenes. And the fourth component is visiting other kinds of ways of achieving consciousness, which may be, like I've been working with the Benedictine monks at a monastery to start a workout exchange program, and with ashrams in India, and with growth centers, and so on, with the Hasids and with the Sufis. So what I'm saying is that this evening is part of my work on myself, because I realize that the only thing you have to offer to another human being ever is your own state of being. You can cop out only just so long, saying, I've got all this fine coat, Joseph's coat of many colors. I know all this and I can do all this. But everything you do, said, whether you're cooking food or doing therapy or being a student or being a lover, you are only doing your own being. You're only manifesting how evolved a consciousness you are. That's what you're doing with another human being. That's the only dance there is. When you are protesting against somebody, the degree of consciousness with which you're protesting determines how well they can hear what it is you're really saying. And consciousness does not mean attachment to polarity at any level. It means freedom from attachment.